Yes, my understanding is from Kathy that there are some teleconferences on 44.
And we'll hear on Senate Bill 44 relating to the establishment operation of State Veterans Home. 213, I think, came to us from the governor's office through more court problems. Mr. Patello, you want to explain that to Senator Schultz?
Can I, before we get started, can I bring up some other business and then get just a question? I shared with Senator Petula there some ideas that we had, and I was asked to work on the procurement. And
I'm sorry.
On the procurement code, and see if there were any revisions that we could make that would allow for at least some standardization within the Department of Transportation. I was wondering if Senator Petula had a chance to look at that, and then second of all, I was wondering if the Finance Committee, if I should share that our ideas that we have a draft bill, and see if the Finance Committee is interested in introducing the legislation, or they want me to do it, or.
Yeah, well, just I think Finance Committee should introduce that legislation.
I do.
And Mr. Chairman, we've asked department to comment. We haven't got their comments back. You may well have got their comments back, which is the only reason for the delay.
Okay. Very good.
But I do think we need it. Really what it is in heavy equipment and so on, we want a different process than just saying a low bid, because the low bid sometimes is junk. And we've got to have a process which includes factors of maintenance, breakdown time, and so on. And quite obviously in the industry, there's certain pieces of equipment that are so much better than other pieces of equipment that over the long haul, with a different method of establishing it, you're so much better off purchasing one kind of equipment or another, that you have to use that as a factor of the low bid. And this whole procurement code is screwed up as can be. It was sort of a copy of the federal thing. It needs a lot of fine-tuning, as you would expect in a whole new program. And we're going to be, this is going to confront us for a long time. Excuse me. But anyway, he's just...
I brought it to the light this morning. I just received a call from Eagle, and they were opening up the Taylor Highway, and they have a Fiat Allison. And last year they lost a roller on it, which is pretty common on a cab. And it took them 6 months to get it. Now they've lost the steering box on it, and they're dead in the water. So,
if they would wait a month or so, God would help them open that road.
God won't help them. Never has, and neither is the legislature.
A lot of that snow would be gone if they waited a little bit. Senator Adams.
No, I'm just going to say that if we can have a rough draft of that legislation so we can look at it.
Yeah.
And there's another bill, Senate Bill number 95, could have something to do with procurement, happens to do with unions. And as many of you know, I love unions, and I would like to have the subcommittee on any union bills, if that's possible. I make my request early.
On union bills?
On union bills.
Oh, I object to that because I know what you're going to do with
it. I know it, because I love unions.
Well, maybe Senator Schultz, if you could pass that information around, and I think, unless there's objection from the committee,
I'll let you know what I've got.
You want to create?
We'll work on a finance yes. bill on that. Mr. Patello, 213.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Bruce Patello. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the State of Alaska. As this body will recall, the Amarada Hess case, which is the case disputing with all the royalty producers on the North Slope, is slated to go to trial on November 4th of this year in Juneau. About 3.5 years ago, three of the producers went into federal court trying to enjoin that trial from taking place in any court in the state of Alaska. They alleged that a trial in the state subjected them to unconstitutional bias because every judge and every prospective juror would stand to benefit financially from the outcome of the case, since any proceeds from an awarded trial would in part end up in the permanent fund and as a result increase the amount of permanent fund dividends. The federal courts, both the U.S. District Court and the Ninth Circuit, rejected the argument, saying you can't raise that in front of us before going first to state court, and certiorari was denied by the U.S. Supreme Court. The defendants in that case finally got around to raising the issue in state court last fall. It was argued slightly over a month ago, and not quite 2 weeks ago, Judge Carpinetti, the judge assigned to the case, actually ruled on the matter. And his ruling grants provisionally their motion to disqualify the Alaska court system. The decision reads in part that AS 43-23045B removes all sources of revenue flowing from the permanent fund to the dividend fund but one, money received in respect of RIK contract adjustment clauses. As a result of this failure, Alaska judges who receive permanent fund dividends have a direct financial interest or an other interest which strongly resembles a direct interest in the outcome of this case. That's buzz language basically to say the financial bias is there. The impartiality of any Alaska judge in this litigation might reasonably be questioned, thus requiring disqualification. And the court concludes, the court's decision will become final unless within 75 days of the date of this order, the legislature enacts curative legislation, that is, legislation which clearly and explicitly precludes Alaska permanent fund monies realized by the state as a result of Amirati Hess contract adjustments in RIK contracts, or interest earned on such monies, or on the earnings of such monies from being placed in the dividend fund. The one gap that the judge has perceived is the following. The state obviously can take oil either in value, which is really what the dispute in the Amirati Hess case itself is about, or it can take it in kind. It can take the oil itself and sell it, and it has done so. The contracts that the state has with those that we are selling, we call those royalty in kind purchasers, requires under those particular contracts that they pay ultimately based on the outcome of the Amirati Hess case, and that is what the judge is saying constitutes the bias. Senate Bill 213 is the curative legislation which the judge has sought. If curative legislation does not take place and we don't get the curative legislation, it means essentially that the judge has concluded that Alaska courts can't hear this case, and we'll be looking for another forum in another state, or in front of an arbitration panel made up of non-Alaskans, or remotely conceivably as an original case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, something that has happened only 3 or 4 times in the century, and there's not much likelihood that we would end up in that forum. That is the reason for the bill. And the language which we have proposed, as I said, is the curative legislation we believe that the court is looking for.
Senator Adams. Yes.
Mayor. Mr. Chairman. Mayor, this piece of legislation has to do with Amirati Hess case, and before you I have amendment number 1, which goes, changes the title and goes to the relation of just this particular case. And I don't know if there was anything that we were going to add and have an open title to this for title chapter 43, Alaska Statute 43, if we're looking at the revenues and taxation. Do you have any objections to tightening the title, Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Chairman, we do not.
If I may continue, then last year we passed a piece of legislation to fix this particular problem. This will hopefully correct any loopholes that we have now. Do you foresee any problems with this in future cases that we might go against?
Mr. Chairman, it is remotely conceivable that this issue could arise again. We've been concerned to limit this solution to the Amirati Hess case. We, in fact, intend in one way or another to appeal the judge's decision. We cannot do so now because it, again, does not have an effective date until 75 days. It will not be entered in any case until 75 days after March 14th. It's our hope, we believe, that the judge's ruling is wrong on the law. We can't afford to take the chance of slowing this case from going to trial, and that's why we're pushing it here. But our ultimate goal is also to get a determination from the state Supreme Court, at least initially, that his ruling is wrong, and therefore we avoid this issue in future royalty cases.
Senator Cretula.
Yeah, I think it's preposterous to suggest for these limited amounts that the judge would be somehow influenced. I think judges every day, including this judge, makes decisions. You could think of 1,000 cases, everything from highway projects and programs and so on that come before the case that the judge might remotely be somehow involved in. Is it a constitutional, and I realize the judge still has a family, so that an extension would be this, some kid in the family. But is it a constitutional possibility that that the judiciary could just be removed from provisions of permanent funds? I mean, after all, they're $100,000 a year men. I think I guess you couldn't remove somebody on the basis of being $100,000 a year men, but can you remove the judiciary from because this conflict will occur on a continuing basis, and that would be a simple solution, perhaps.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be loath to suggest that alternative at this point. I think it would be...
What's the top of your head suggestion constitutionally? Lawyers always give you top of your head.
Mr. Chairman, my off-the-cuff reaction is that...
You don't want to practice before him if you say anything about the subject at all.
That I would say it's a very close question at best. Our best chance would be that it's a 50-50 for that kind of enactment. I would expect that the court
wouldn't look on a kind.
Would judges would challenge it? The Supreme Court would ultimately decide it. And my guess is that they would not find a reasonable basis for discriminating on the basis of one's status as a judge.
Wouldn't they have to disqualify themselves, though, from that decision on the basis of its self-interest?
This is one of the arguments we actually advanced in front of the Superior Court. There is a doctrine called the rule of necessity, and that is where everyone is disqualified, no one is disqualified. The U.S. Supreme Court regularly rules upon challenges to retirement benefits for judges, increases in salary and the like. And the courts have uniformly held that under this doctrine, the rule of necessity, they are not disqualified from deciding. And our argument to the Superior Court, among others, was that to the extent that one could claim that all judges in the state had a disqualifying interest, the rule of necessity was appropriate, and that meant that none was disqualified from hearing the matter. And that would be one of the arguments we would make, in fact, in front of the state Supreme Court.
You know, I suppose system may never be imposed on the judiciary, but a far more important branch of the government, which is the legislative branch, anytime we feel we have a conflict, we stand up and ask for disqualification, we're automatically turned down, we go through the process. Maybe that same process could be instituted in the judicial sense, I don't know. But I'm not sure that isn't the dumbest thing I've ever said. It might possibly be a possibility.
Mr. Patella, I had a question on the total amounts of money that might be involved here. Do you have a feeling for how much money might be involved with passage of this bill relative to 25% of this amount going to the permanent fund? And then, you know, well, I wouldn't ask you to calculate the dividend impact, but just for the starting point.
Certainly. The RIK portion, which is now could be covered in the umbrella, is another $300 million. So we're talking about $75 million that would be going into the permanent fund and would otherwise be segregated from the permanent fund dividend fund. So that's the magnitude we're talking about.
So, and usually rule of thumb, about half of it goes to dividend. So half of 75 would not be going to dividend, and then dividing that by...
Mr. Chairman, my guess is we're talking of an impact after the five-year average of only a few dollars, $5, $6, an individual, perhaps even less. I'm just not saying I don't want to minimize its impact, but I think it's rather de minimis.
For members of the committee, I'm not happy with the fiscal note that was attached here by the permanent fund, which is zero. We've already gone through a little exercise on the floor on a similar piece of, not a similar piece of legislation, but something involving permanent fund. There are members, as you know, who want to have a complete accounting of any and all monies within the permanent fund or going out in dividends. We've tried to contact the permanent fund on this. They do not want to get involved in this legislation for whatever reason, but it would be my intention of, if we can't get the permanent fund to do it, to prepare a fiscal note at least to discuss the analysis that we just had here, that there is some minimal impact, at least what would stay in as principal. That obviously has higher some interest for the future on the corpus. What wouldn't be going out otherwise as a dividend, even though it may be several dollars, I think we better state whatever that is on a fiscal note or state that in an analysis of the fiscal note. I don't think zero is really completely accurate in this case.
Mr. Chairman, it may well be that the Department of Law could furnish that information. We have, for purposes of preparing the case for argument, we did fairly extensive analyses on the various dollar impacts. I believe that we can provide that information.
That would be very helpful. In fact, what we might do is just attach the Department of Law analysis to the fiscal note and rolling it into a finance fiscal note for our signature here. That would be very helpful.
We'll have it for you today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there further questions of Mr. Patel on the legislation? Is there any other discussion in general? Senator Adams, you do have an amendment. Were you desiring to move that amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one. Basically, what it does is tightens up the title there, and it just pertains to the case that the mayor has prescribed. And with that, I move amendment number one.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? It's a title tightening amendment. Is there any objection to the adoption of the amendment? If not, the Adams amendment is adopted. Is there anybody else that desires to testify on this bill? Further discussion, Senator Adams?
Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that a new CS be adopted for Senate Bill number 213, incorporating my amendment.
Is there any objection to the adoption of a new finance CS incorporating the amendment to 213? If not, so adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams.
Move that the new CS for Senate Bill number 213 be moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
Prior to moving on that, I would, if I could, ask the indulgence of the committee if I could be permitted to revise the fiscal note to accompany the bill. Is there any discussion of that or any objection to that? Senator Adams.
I have no objection. The fiscal note to me, with all the zeros there, shows we're not going to solve the case for another 5 years. No objection.
There was a motion to move the new finance CS for 213 from the committee with individual recommendations. Is there any objection?
Without objection.
Without objection, then a bill moves from committee with individual recommendations. The next bill before us, and a bill 44 relating to the establishment and operation of state veterans home, sponsored by Senator Curtula. I would ask members, we do have Mr. Culver, I believe in Kodiak online, and if we could use our microphones, I'm sure he would appreciate it. Mr. Culver, are you online?
Not yet.
Okay. Maybe while we're waiting, Senator Curtula, do you have an overview?
First, I would ask that like to move that we adopt the committee substitute suggested in your packet as committee substitute. It changes, and we've had a number of conversations now, and initiated by the administration and the new director of the Veterans Affairs, the new commissioner, General Cox. And I'd like to move to adopt committee substitute, which just provides the new department administration, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, which is very interested in this legislation. I'd ask unanimous consent for adoption of committee substitute.
Is there a discussion on the adoption of the committee substitute? Is there objection to the adoption of the committee substitute? If not, the new CS for 44 finance is adopted.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, adopt the committee substitute. Veterans organizations statewide are coming on a continuing basis and to support a facility in Alaska. There are 15,000 World War II veterans getting in the age from, you know, obviously a low of about 60, 61 to be very elderly individuals. There's no facilities in this state for them. There's a limited option to send them outside. There is substantial reason to believe that the state would get high priority from the federal government for a facility. These people would be eligible for other alternative state facilities that would cost us 100%, one to construct and two to support. And I'm asking for the authorization legislation to allow us to proceed to probe into and to acquire at least have the option of acquiring a state veterans home I've designated the Mat-Su particularly. It is my constituency, but also particularly it is right in the center of the area that has a shortage of other facilities. Mat-Su is also immediately adjacent to the area that has the largest veteran population, and I would expect that area to contribute into its triangle, which includes the Pioneer Senior Facilities and major hospital facilities. Into that triangle, it would contribute to the land, water, sewer, and those things that would cost an enormous amount of money in any other location. To that end, I introduced Senate Bill 44 primarily at the request of veterans organizations. I know there are people out here that wish to testify, and thank you very much for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
Questions of the bill sponsor? Why don't we go to... I'm sorry, Senator Schultz.
Okay. Just a question on designating the Mat-Su Sioux Center Valley in the legislation. More than likely, if there is a veterans facility built, there'll probably only be one built in the state, would there not? I mean, what's the likelihood of getting two or maybe beyond that? So by designating this in here, it doesn't look to me like that there's an opportunity to for it to go anywhere else. And the only reason I'm mentioning that, Senator, is that we have ASHA housing that is vacated in the Tok area, and we have the pump station that has been vacated for quite some years, and we used it during the fire. And it's really a remarkable facility, and everything is there and it's working. And we got into this discussion some time ago as it related to a youth corps or something coming into the state. And we were trying to get Stevens at that time to look at that Tok area and utilizing that facility. So that's just a question that I have. I think that we're more or less designating in here, because I don't think we'll have the opportunity to really go anywhere else.
The legislation, the first one, has a designation into it. There's no doubt about that. I think the facility location is pretty central. And, of course, I've stated that there's a strong interest in the district that I represent to have the facility, and they're willing to make substantial contributions toward it. Again, it doesn't prohibit the state this side from having alternate and other facilities, but I don't know what the federal priority will be for doing so. Other states, I believe, have more than one facility.
Senator Duncan. Mr. Chairman, I was just going to suggest it. You know, we started off with the Pioneer Home in Sitka, and since then, we've had several others built, and I was thinking about a couple of years, not right away, probably introducing a bill to amend AS 4435020, which says that there shall also be one at Juneau. I'm just kidding. I mean, I think there are opportunities down line if the need is there, right? It was determined, and if we had the money or the feds were going to participate, there would be opportunities for other areas of the state to have a home also. I don't think this forecloses that possibility. I'm just, yes?
My understanding, it does not. As a matter of fact, while we were pursuing this, and we do not know technically the possibilities, but we're pursuing this in more than one region that suggested that there may well come the opportunity for a wing, for a veteran's wing, to be added on to some of the Pioneer Home facilities that have adequate base, that is, i.e. the facilities for food and so on are substantial and could stand an additional impact on their kitchens and other facilities. And more than one home has come up as a possibility for that. But we don't know technically what can be done there, but it has come up in testimony I've had as a suggestion, and certainly that's one plan that could be pursued.
Senator Schultz.
Yeah. Just as a follow-up, if I may, what is approximately, what, 80% federal funding for this is in that vicinity? Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. And I was just wondering, when we pass a statute like this, and let's just say the VA did come in and start doing an analysis, do they have to, if they decided that they wanted to put a facility, let's just say they wanted to put it in Fairbanks or in Anchorage, would they be able to do that when we have a statute that says that the Mat-Su Sioux Center Valley would be, or Kodiak or whatever? Would they be tied to that? Or can they, since they're putting in 80% of the money, could they make their own decision? as to where they would think it would best go.
Well, the senator could note the legislation now, I suspect, would require that they consider the value. On the other hand, if they came out with a negative report, I suspect that it would come back to the legislature for a determination of another location.
If the group here supports a veterans home, then a suggested, and let's not fight over the location, then the suggested amendment could be on page 2, lines number 7, after the words Matsu Valley area, delete the words and at and add the word or. So the word would, the thing would word, the department within available funds shall establish and operate veterans home in the Matsu Valley area or other sites designated by the adjutant general. And this doesn't mean that they have to come back to it. It just says wherever within the state of Alaska that they feel that this home should be. But I do have questions of Department of Military Affairs. One of the things that they're doing is cutting back in federal funds on building hospitals in Alaska. And I just want to see if they, if there's anything that, any funds to build a veterans home if they're cutting back on hospitals. And I'd like to hear from Morrison or somebody to ask that question. But that was a friendly amendment that you guys can work out, and it was just a suggestion.
Other discussion before we go to the witnesses? Mr. Goldberg, are you online and desiring to testify?
Mr. Chairman, are there other sites on?
No.
So Mr. Culver is a silver.
Mr. Culver, please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, could you, members of the committee? My name is Warren Culver. I represent the American Legion. Department of Alaska, and we're urging passage of Senate Bill 44 and 45. And our fellow veterans, new veterans of foreign wars, join us in this request and support. As been stated here several times, approximately 63,000 veterans in the state. And as a matter of fact, that we have the highest per capita of any state in the nation, and this veterans per the population. In this respect, I might be incorrect as to one or two, but I think over 38 states do have a veterans home, which supports I think of Arizona, for example, they just have one, there's a couple or three in some of the larger states. Yet, we are standing out here in this relatively few states that do not have such a veterans home for our veterans. Continuing with the last hearing, Mr. Chairman, was for the past, well, before I proceed to that point, I'd like to bring something up. The VA, as far as the home would be concerned and the federal contribution, that's covered by statute and by regulation. The VA does not direct where the home will be. It just lets you have to reach certain standards, and beyond that, it's up to the state locality to do the rest and support that. Now, as far as Senator Adams' comment concerning cutting hospitals in Alaska and elsewhere, it is true that the $38 million budget back in the Washington for healthcare facilities for the Veterans Administration has been, is in some serious questioning as to where the cost cutting will be. But Alaska, as the Senator knows, has no hospital. The veteran hospital, because we do not have the population to So the needs are there. had got underway, pretty much was self-supporting. It would not have needed to go to the various legislatures and ask for more money. And if you compare the cost of these veterans' homes with the cost of your pioneer homes, and don't get me wrong, I think it's one of the greatest things Alaska has done, but you'll see where the costs are very, very much higher in the at least, I'm talking about all the other states, costs of living in all those in 19. But at least they seem to indicate that it's pretty much cheaper in the operating end of it than it is for, but cheaper for the veterans' loan than it is for the homes that the pioneer homes are some similar of sales to the past. So, Mr. Chairman, all I would do would be to end with the construction end of it, as I say, to be taken care of. The federal government has declared a certain it does direct where the state's going to put it, and also that it just, once the home is there, then for most parts, and the home is run by the state, the bigger state of law. So I don't see any problem in that area. As far as the Senator Duncan suggested, he'd like to have one in Juneau, VA. And I tell the Senator, we'd like to have one across the state, but we believe that best start with one here and see if that we can't take care of something pressing needs around here. And you come tomorrow for another day to obtain another home. I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this time.
Mr. Culver, thank you very much for your testimony. I think Senator Kutula has a question.
Mr. Attorney General, I guess that applies to the military too. I can still call you General. Warren, concern is, would the federal government, one of the concerns is, would the federal government apt to assist the state and proceed with the veterans' home? I understand the state locates it, the state makes the decision, it's a state responsibility, but will the federal government, in your opinion, be supportive of this effort from your present experiences, and do you and do the veterans intend to intensify an effort to nationally, back in D.C., to get the feds to participate if the state shows an inclination to provide for the facility to the maximum extent of its responsibility?
As you know, we do, and the Council of the National Organization, I might say, is over to the Congress in support of money for the construction of veterans' homes in the various amounts throughout the country, and that's why this year that was not cut from the budget, at least for the allocations that would be made by the federal government. Next year, we may not have it. That's all I say.
Continue this, Mr. Chairman. Then it's imperative that we make a decision this year. That is, if we wish to have a relative certainty of getting the match formula funds. I'm just somewhat questioning one other statement that was made by the General to me today, Warren. Remember, in territorial times, we had a 1% statewide sales tax that went into providing the best loans, best housing program, and we were all pretty proud of that because after World War II, it funded the programs required within about 4 years. Again, this territory made quite a substantial effort. The General says that our efforts are awfully modest compared to other states on behalf of veterans in this state, including just the Alaskan veterans. So what is your comment there?
What do you mean, as far as the sales tax is concerned?
Pardon me for wandering around. I just said that we once probably led the states in providing facility and funds compared to our size. Now the General says that many other states provide much more for their veterans than we do. Much more in the way of facilities. I know we provide for differential in interest on housing, but I think we probably do provide very little for veterans in this state compared to others. But that was what the General said. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes, sir, I do. As a matter of fact, as you recall, during the years of the Egan administration, we had the various mortgage programs and the home loan program, and even in territorial times, we kept up that revolving fund. And constantly, right up until 1968 or so, we were one of the
Thank you very much. Thank you again.
Other questions of Mr. Colton? If not, we do have some representatives from the administration here. Mr. Morrison from Veterans Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Morrison from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I don't have any necessarily prepared statement, but I'm not sure if Senator Adams got the question that he asked answered in the process, or if you care to have me address that on the availability of federal funds.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I honestly can't answer that. I think if I could call on Paula Scavera, she may have a little better information on that. She's very technically aware of what the situation is. Paul, if you could join me, please.
But Mr. Culver said he felt there was a window of opportunity now if you could hear his testimony, because the funds this year are provided.
That's good. If you could identify yourself.
My name is Paula Scavera. I work for Legislative Research. I've done research on veterans' homes for the past 14, 15 months. I also visited a veterans' home this fall. There are two different pots of money which are available to a state veterans' home. One is under U.S. Code 5031 to 5037, which is the construction grant program, which is, like the general said, funded for this year. And then there is under U.S. Code 38641 to 643, which is the payment and per diem for operating expenses, and which is also funded for this year.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir.
Then if I went back to look at code number 531, 537, 641, or 643, would I find a designated grant for Veterans of Alaska in the amount of $7 million for a capital appropriation, or is it just a lump sum that's in those particular codes that you have given this committee?
That is just the U.S. code law, which says there will be those programs. If you call the Veterans Administration and ask under the state homes, state operating grants, you will find there's funds. You will not find any funds designated for Alaska, because what happens is we have to apply for those funds, and we cannot apply for those funds until legislation is passed which shows that this state is willing to put one half of their 35% matching.
And then, would the state also have to show that you would operate once the facility was constructed in an operating funds of perhaps in the neighborhood from $2.1 million to $2.8 million on a yearly basis?
Well, when you fill out what would have to happen for us for a state home to be built and authorized by the federal VA is the legislature would have to pass enabling it legislation that shows that they want a state home and would operate a state home. They have to pass an appropriation bill that shows that they would be willing to put up the construction money of one half of our 35%, and then you have to apply to the Veterans Administration, and in part of the application process it is taking responsibility for a state home. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you, Paula.
Other questions of Ms. Cavera? Mr. Morrison, another question I believe rose last time was your department's ability to manage a home. How would that work?
Mr. Chairman, I've discussed this with General Cox, and I think we're both of the opinion, although it's, I'd say it's not anything I want to state in any hard and fast in equivocal opinion, that it would be cheaper to the state to have the existing infrastructure of the Department of Administration available to manage and operate the home. However, we are most willing to do it under our department if that is necessary.
And how would you carry that out?
Well, we would rely a great deal on contracts and reimbursable arrangements with the Department of Administration for Pioneers Benefits
to provide us all the expertise and advice that that we would lack in our own department. You know, it's basically it's a healthcare facility, essentially. And the department administration currently has all the background and existing staff to administer healthcare facilities. We don't want to create an infrastructure within our own department that duplicates another department, so we would have to necessarily rely on their expertise.
Other questions, Mr. Morrison? Thank you. We've got Bruce Aronson, Department Administration.
Hello, I'm Bruce Aronson, Deputy Director with the Division of Pioneers Benefits. Barbara Bassey is away. I have no testimony to offer, but I'm available for questions.
What's the position of your department on this legislation?
The department opposes the bill because we feel that there's enough, that there's too many vacant beds available.
Is he on teleconference? Are you on teleconference?
I have a switch on.
Are you on it?
Yes.
I am not.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I apologize. I'm sorry.
The department's position is that they oppose the bill because there are currently vacant nursing beds available in the state of Alaska.
Senator,
just the question of what percentage of the vacancy beds are available in the state of Alaska. What percentage? Do you have the percentage?
Oh,
of
Mr. Chairman, while he's answering that, I've been informed by General Cox that Governor Walter Hickel, whose department administration will be reporting to damn soon, is in support of this legislation unequivocally, and he would be better off checking his facts before he tells me what a new department administration filled with old-time bureaucrats is confirming.
As of January 31st, 1991, there were 144 vacant beds based on the census by the Division of Medical Assistance. And that's of a total of 144 vacant beds, 607 filled beds.
Other questions, Mr. Aaron? Thank you very much. Larry Struber? You could identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Striver. I'm the Planning Section Chief with the Department of Health and Social Services, and our office administers their Certificate of Need program. I don't have any testimony to offer, but I was told that perhaps you had some questions about whether Certificate of Need would or could, or how that would apply to this situation.
Senator Adams.
Would you tell me the guidelines? You just heard from Department Administration testify there was 144 vacant beds. What procedure would be need to go through in order to convert those, or a policy change to convert those to veteran homes? Is there something we're missing here, or can it be done?
Senator, most of those beds are in private institutions, and the private institutions would have to be a willing partner to a process like that. I do understand there are 144 vacant beds. As far as the certificate of need, they would have to go through a certificate of need for that type of process unless it was specifically exempted by the legislature. But I think the main key is that the private operators would need to be willing partners.
Senator, I'm sorry, Senator Adams, will you finish?
Yeah, I'm finished. Thank you.
Senator Duncan.
Well, civic and e-process is one question. I wanted to go back to the question of 144 vacant beds from the gentleman from health, from administration, if he could come back.
Mr.
It may not be through a COM, but I wanted
if you could stay there, Mr.
I wanted to be sure I understood. And I think it was just testified that the 144 beds, of course, are mostly private, or they're in private institutions. I don't know that we've got those nursing beds available in any of our state facilities, such as Pioneer Homes. What is the cost per month for an individual to go into a private nursing home on average?
Mr. Chairman, based on the Alaska Nursing Home Census Report of January 31st, they list a Medicaid reimbursement rate that varies, well, for example, Heritage Place in Soldata, $220 a day. It ranges all the way up to $290 a day in Wrangell.
So we're talking in the neighborhood of $6,000 to $7,000 a month or somewhere in that neighborhood. And I guess the question that needs to be asked, I don't know if you can answer this or not, but will these veterans qualify for the most part for Medicaid or not? Because if they don't, then that means they're going to have to pay $6,000 to $7,000 a month to get in to fill these beds, and that may be the reason why they're not presently filled. So I think the department needs to take into their consideration the reason why those beds are unfilled. And it's probably because private payors can't afford that kind of money for a nursing home, and they don't qualify for Medicaid, or they would already be there. Have you looked at that?
I think you're correct.
Pardon?
I think you're correct.
Yes. So I guess I'm not clear as to why then the testimony was that we oppose this because there's 144 vacant beds. If those beds could be used, they'd be being used. And it's just not doing anything is not going to solve the problem. It's not going to allow those beds to be filled because folks just can't afford that kind of cost. And I hope you take that into your testimony in the future.
Mr. Chairman, that applies to non-veterans as well, though. The cost of private nursing care is so expensive.
Sure, it does apply to non-veterans. I concur, and again, not to get in the middle of this, but this was, as I understand the legislation, an attempt to be sure that veterans, who of course can't afford it either, would have a facility where they could go. And I just wanted to clarify the fact that just because there are 144 beds out there doesn't mean that they can all be used. We wish they could, but they can't be. That's unfortunate.
I think it. My understanding also from all the testimony we've had is it would be just brief stays, obviously, for those homes, for those facilities, for any particular veteran, 90, 180 max if funds are available. But I also am told by counsel that the vacancy rate that you're stating includes a high percentage of vacancy in the Fairbanks area, and that home, to quote my materials, is in bad shape and in imminent danger of closure, and nobody's going to that home. It just shows statistically. And that's the information that has been imparted upon me in the last few minutes. If you wish to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe Senator Cotula is correct. There are 35 beds shown as vacant as of January 31st for the Denali Center. I understand they're not, by the general population, are not considered desirable beds.
I think there's another proposal in the works to do something about that, too. Other questions of either the Department of Administration or Department of Health and Social Services?
Just one other question, because it all ties into this area. And we are, we do have a problem in our present Pioneer home system. We're trying to address that somewhat in the budget proposal. Hopefully the Senate Finance Committee will be looking at. But do you know, Mr. Aronson, in our Pioneer home system, is there a waiting list for nursing beds?
Yes, there's a rather extensive waiting list that in most cases amounts to many years.
In what?
It amounts to years for all the homes.
Right. And this, you know, again, without getting in the middle of this, of course, this would be one way of trying to help resolve that problem, as well as trying to move, and I know, you know, there are some proposals to do that which would come before this committee, to try to move some of the Pioneer home beds to more assisted living, to nursing, would help resolve that problem too. But it is a major problem that needs to be addressed. We just can't say we oppose the bill because there's vacant beds. We need to do something to put people into those beds. And probably the waiting list is much more than 144 anyway, right?
Based on the Pioneers home census, the end of February, we have 193 names on the waiting list. Many of those are duplicates. People apply to two or three Pioneers homes. The reality is that it takes years for most folks, if they are on the outside and require nursing care, before they would actually be offered a space.
Thank you.
Senator Cotula, I also had a question. Senator Cotula, maybe you can answer this. What was the proposal on the number of beds, residential versus nursing care?
Our proposal was a facility initially of approximately 60 beds or 60 bedrooms. Whether it breaks down into nursing or resident care, that is, people that don't need nursing care, that arrangement, I felt would probably be about 50-50. That's the testimony I have for the question. Fitting 12 a year or something at the moment.
I'm sorry, did you have another?
Kathy has it here. 30 nursing beds and 22 regular in a home of 52.
Same as
based on Juneau.
Mr. Chairman,
another thing has occurred to me, both with the Sitka home and Territorial Times, certainly with the Matsu Pioneers home and the Anchorage home, I believe, I cannot testify to the Fairbanks location or the Juneau location, but we had no support of the department administration or the administration in those years. It definitely was a legislative survey, legislative recognition of need, and we had a great reluctance from the department administration. We've never had any support out of any of the times that both Senator Duncan and I have introduced funding increases for Pioneers pension programs. We're lucky not to have their outright hostility. I don't think it's an area, it's the department administration is a bookkeeping area, that's what it is. It's not a policy setting area. We've, because the governor's office found having taking too much time of the governor himself, we transferred the function of Pioneers and so on over to department administration. We didn't want to bring into consideration certain of the negatives of the welfare program, so we didn't want it over in Health Social Services. But again, it's a bookkeeping group, does a good job of providing the services that it does, but it's not one to initiate or to set policy. It's not a natural for it. It's not an advocative group. That is the reason that the Department of Military Affairs looked at it and the general got into it. The general talked to Governor Hickel. I've talked to him in the last 12 hours and said, look what we're doing for veterans in other states. Look what we're not doing for veterans in Alaska. We have a true veterans need. This is a substantial subsidy for people that we're going to have to provide for one way or another, and I believe we will have to. And this was the best way to go, and the veterans are an advocate group, and the general is becoming an advocate of the facility. Again, I can't hold department administration responsible for their testimony in the regard that I first did, because they're just bookkeepers. That's what they're meant to be. They're not an advocacy group.
Mayor Schultz.
I have no questions.
Oh.
I didn't know. That was nothing. I was just maybe.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, I need to apologize because I was thinking about the topic of nursing beds when the answer was given on certificate of need, and I wanted to see if that could be repeated. How does the certificate of need process fit in with this type of authorization? What is the role as a CON process is presently structured?
Sorry, Senator, I didn't hear all of your question. Was that, how does it relate to this specific bill?
Yes, how would the CON process interact here?
As it stands right now, a certificate of need is required for a $1 million expenditure for a healthcare facility, which in this case would include intermediate care facility or skilled nursing care facility. Most probably, unless exempted specifically by this bill as it is, a certificate of need would be required. There are some complex issues that get involved, mainly that although the statute says that federal facilities require a certificate of need, by virtue of federal supremacy, they do not have to get a certificate of need. Initially, when I was queried about this earlier this year by the Legislative Affairs Agency, I told them that if it was a federally owned and operated and run facility, a certificate of need would not be required because we cannot enforce that because of the virtue of federal supremacy. However, if it does meet all the standards, if $1 million is expended, and it's the equivalent of intermediate care facility or skilled nursing, which most assuredly it will be, and $1 million is expended, yes, a certificate of need would be required, unless exempted as it is in this bill.
Okay, just for information, because I don't recall, and maybe they're exempted somehow, but for the Juneau Pioneer Home, which was the last. that's correct, Senator. The pioneer homes are the
Civic Hall Pioneer.
Yes.
I guess that was a decision of the state.
I think it was in the course of that.
Chairman, that's right. Pioneer's home. However, I just want to point out, Matsu Valley was granted for 100 heads. Funding not available in a reasonable time frame by the planners. And eventually, the fell through or was gone. Way before the time he came in, the 100 heads was decided about 6 years ago. And the project together and the funding in a time frame and was gone. They did have it. put the beneficiary of any of these facilities. The point is, a lot of these people that are
Chairman, my name is Kathy Hathaway, and I work for Senator Curtula.
When we drafted this bill, I think in your packet there's a long two-page proposal about the kind of how we saw this proposed home developing. Paul, I think gave you a pretty good idea of how other states have different eligibility requirements. On the second page of that packet, we put in a proposed eligibility requirement that was, I guess, somewhat based on West Virginia's criteria and somewhat based on Wyoming's criteria. This is definitely non-binding. It was just to give the legislature, the committee, some sort of idea of how it might work. And I guess what we anticipated is that the veterans groups who are most significantly involved in this would be the ones to determine what the criteria should be for admission, basically. But this was to give you an idea of how it might work.
Mr. Chairman, the requirement to be a resident of the state of Alaska, is that just sort of something that sort of just as an idea that you came up with?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator Ewing. As Paula said, the state residency requirements, separate from the service-related criteria, differ from state to state. Some states are 30 days, some states are 1 year. I think some states limit it only to veterans who actually joined from that state or, I don't know, like 15-year residency, a pretty limited. That also is not in the legislation.
Mr. Chairman, the federal government of the federal administration doesn't put any requirements on what residency needs to be, or that, you know, if the state wants to go ahead and say 2 year residency, they're gonna allow that. Still, there's no question about the federal money.
Mr. Chairman, I think Paula probably knows that better than I do, but I don't believe so. That right now there's such a wide variation and the feds are paying, you know, they're basically going along with whatever the states are doing, is my understanding.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you. Now that you've referred me to this, I have one other question back on why on your second area, on the second page there, demand, need. We discussed this whole thing about Medicare and so on. Your statement is, currently the VA sends 12 Alaskans a year outside the state to nursing home placement, as the VA will only reimburse private nursing home care in Alaska for approximately 90 days. Is there a difference between how long they will reimburse in Alaska and they will reimburse in other states?
I don't believe so. It's a standard, nationwide standard.
But then why, your statement leads me to believe that the reason they're sent outside by the VA is because the VA will pay for them outside. Oh, they're paying for them in a veteran's nursing home.
In a state veteran's home. They're being sent outside to a state veteran's home.
But the length of time that they will pay for them in a non-veteran's nursing home is 90 days.
90 days, although I believe that Attorney General Culver was correct in saying, in exceptional circumstances, it can be up to 180 days, but generally 90 days and possibly, but absolutely no more than 90.
As I read that statement, I thought maybe there was a reason why they would pay for them in private nursing homes outside longer than they would in Alaska. I understand the difference. It's veterans' homes outside. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions, Ms. Hathaway? Not Senator Couture?
Well, I'd like to move the bill out with individual recommendations.
Is there a discussion on the motion to move with individual recommendations? Is there any objection?
Objection.
Any objection? Without objection, then Senate Bill 44 moves with the Finance CS moves with individual recommendations with the accounting system. That concludes our work today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Long step.
You are really trying. Trying. Right. Right. I think Wally Hepp ought to go tell his people.
I'm not even sure you understood what you were saying. How did you react to
it? They don't think that anybody's supposed to run the show.